Hi guys.
Good evening. Today is March 27th, and we are studying the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter step is, can somebody help me out? I forgot to ask that question.
The preface and the foreword.
The prefaces and the foreword. Thank you very much. And our speaker tonight is Bonnie. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I am Bonnie P., and I'm a born-again compulsive overeater. The reason I identify with that is on page 63, we read, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, we were reborn. First, I'll share some background on my food addiction and then talk about my path to recovery and how the preface and forewords helped me to have a better understanding of the Big Book. My opinions here tonight, which I do have a few of them, are just my opinions. I come from a family of Holocaust survivors, and I'm the first generation here in this country. My dad had a very low opinion of overweight Americans. So the message early on was, no matter how successful you were in life, if you were fat, which is what he would call them, you're a failure. Well, my mom was a compulsive overeater, so that created some issues between them. And she could never lose weight. He did not allow much food in the house, but my mom would buy junk. And we had special hiding places, and we ate when he wasn't home. I hid my whole life, and I became very good at it. I would make things disappear in a split second, including spitting out my food in my hands, shoving it in my pockets. No one ever knew how sick I really was. My mom's diabetes was very difficult to control. She was on a combination of pills and shots. And I remember one time I went into her closet to get something and everything fell out. All kinds of food, all kinds of, you know, junk that she had hidden. And I just got so upset. And I just remember like yelling, what, you know, I couldn't understand why she couldn't stop. I felt as though she didn't love us enough to stop. And I blamed her for her disease. She fell when I was in middle school. She had her leg amputated and my dad locked the kitchen door. So she would walk down the front stairs, around the back of the house and up the back stairs. And you can imagine with the prosthetic back that many years ago. And she would do that to obviously, you know, to get to the food. So she died when I was 25 years old. And my brother died shortly after from the disease as well. I know that I was born a compulsive overeater. My first life memories have to do with food, particularly sugar. So my first life memory is being served borscht soup and literally a lightning bolt. Borscht soup is basically beets and sugar. Just went through my body from head to toe, to my fingers, to my feet, everything. And I felt it. And from that point on, it was always about the next bite. It was never about the one I was eating. I remember looking at it and thinking, before I even finished it, after that first bite, I just remember thinking, how can I get more? Even though the bowl was full, I was always looking at somebody else's food and always wanting more. I can't remember one single day that I was not plagued with remorse and self-hatred from living in this disease. Food-related thoughts controlled my life, and I became a victim to my disease. Sometimes I would hit my head against the wall to actually get the food thoughts, to try to get the food thoughts and the crazy out of my head, and I just couldn't. And I hated myself for not being able to control my actions. I had a horrible body image as well. And I remember one time at camp, I was very young, and I threw my bathing suits on the rafter so I wouldn't have to wear them. It was overnight camp because my dad's man was in my head. Boys don't like fat girls. So they had to drive up they had to drive up several hours from Boston to bring me bathing suits. So fast forward, my sister and I, it was high school, had a job managing an ice cream store, surprise, a chain. And we had the keys to the store because we were shift supervisors. So we would go in at night when the store was closed and done with the key. And we would pack quarts of ice cream and all the toppings, everything, just everything we could pack up. And they also had candy. So we packed up that as well. And we would have food parties. She lived on the loft, like third floor upstairs. And we would just have food. We would open everything up and have these massive food parties and listen for my dad to call our names. And then we would have to hide everything. And I remember one time he called our names and everything was out. And we threw the quilt over the ice cream and the toppings and everything. And then she turned the quilt over and she slept with that quilt. So in high school, I was able to find a doctor who prescribed amphetamines. You would go, it was like one of those quack doctors, and you would say, I want to lose weight. And he would just write you a prescription. Well, that was awesome. So that started my 3 and 3, which was my life of binging my brains out for 3 days and then completely starving for the next, partially because I was so sick from the unbelievable binges and I literally just couldn't eat for 3 days, but also, you know, it was deliberate. So I didn't really carry my weight until my 30s, because I was able to restrict for 3 and then binge for 3. So I pulled all kinds of stunts to lose the 70 pounds that I needed to lose. I had very crazy diets that I did, one of which was the bulimia diet. I'm not sure if you guys, some of you may be familiar with it, but I remember having, vomit in my hair and my clothes, and eventually my fingers didn't work, so I put pencils down there. And the medical repercussions were quite a few. One was direct trauma to my vocal cords permanently, a reminder that I carry with me when people say, excuse me, can you speak up, or the connection's bad, you keep going in and out. I also have a hiatal hernia from that, from the pressure of self-induced vomiting, as well as the acid, from the acid burning the hole in the lining of my stomach. I had frequent sore throats and sometimes lost my voice altogether, but none of that stopped me. I went through a phase where I abused diuretics and laxatives. One time, I remember being on a bus going to work as a waitress in a white waitress uniform. So I'm going to let you guys guess what the laxatives did and what happened to me with my white waitress uniform. But again, none of that stopped me. And again, I hated myself for not being able to control my behaviors. I was filled with lies around my addictions, lies to myself that this time was going to be the time. If somebody lied to me once or twice or three times, I wouldn't respect them anymore. How could I like myself or have any self-respect whatsoever when I lied to myself thousands and thousands and thousands of times? I was embarrassed about the quantities that I ate. So very often I would pretend I was on the phone when I was ordering something at a store and pretend, you know, like, oh, wait, Aaron, what is it you want? Oh, okay, I'll have this, this, and that. Oh, wait, my husband wants this and that. And, you know, it was just lying, constant lying. And I had food hidden in every nook and cranny and every pocket so that it was always accessible. I hit invitations, I missed gatherings, and I have loads and loads of family photo albums that I'm not in any pictures. So sometimes life events bring us into the program. And on November 6th of 2020, my son was in college and he called from the emergency room. He was at Johns Hopkins. And he said, I smelled something that nobody else smelled. And I'm in the emergency room. And they found something on my brain. And they need to do more tests. So I have to go by. And so my husband and myself drove from Boston and met with the team the next day. And my son has a brain tumor. He's 28 years old. So my disease was in full swing at that point. And I knew that there wasn't room for both his disease and mine, and his wasn't going anywhere. I needed to be present to do the research. This wasn't just like, you know, hip surgery or something like that. It was, every word was a foreign language when it comes to the brain. I knew I needed to be present to be able to get him the best care possible, to talk to a team of doctors, ask the right questions, and understand what they were even saying. So that was moment of truth. That was totally my moment of truth. That was it for me. And I knew I needed spirituality. I also knew at that point that there was never going to be a tomorrow where I would wake up and really mean this was the day, because I knew that I was a liar. It finally occurred to me after 60 years, you're a liar. You don't really mean it. You're never going to wake up and mean it. So I came to the point where I said, all right, either I'm going to accept my lot in life or take action, period. Those are my two options. Eating was bad enough, but eating in program was even worse because the recovery is thrown in your face. So my last episode, I remember, was my gummy bear episode. And I kind of compare it to the whiskey and the milk analogy in the book, because I felt as though gummy bears, because they didn't have fat in them, I could just eat massive quantities. So I was on a trip back from London and I tried to find a package of gummy bears. The package I found, the only one that they had at the airport, was a party size bag of gummy bears. So with 32 servings. So I thought, okay, this is great. I'll just keep the gummy bears for however long. Okay, needless to say, 45 minutes into the flight, all 32 servings were gone. But what really scared me was that I knew if I had another bag, I would eat them too. And I always felt, I always had this safety net that in the back of my mind, if I ate too much and I got sick, I could be rushed to the hospital and get my stomach pumped. While on plane, I couldn't. And that really, really scared me. So I had been in and out of OA for a lot of years, but it was local groups. And I had never been abstinent and I had never done the steps. It was more like women who came to the local groups kind of for like a night out. And, you know, basically they would complain about their husbands. And that was basically it. I bought a big book, but I never opened it. So I thought to myself on the way home from Baltimore, I thought, Baltimore would be Johns Hopkins. Boston would be where I live. So I thought, okay, I'll go home and I'll look for the book somewhere in the attic. And if I don't find it, then I'll just order it from Amazon. So I opened the bulkhead from the attic and I lied to you not, as I go up the stairs, the big book was right there at the top of the stairs, which really, really scared me because I didn't even know I was going to look for the big book until I was in Baltimore. So I couldn't even say to myself, well, maybe I looked for it, you know, before. No, period, no. So when I went to reach for it, it was like something stopped me for a minute and there was this silence. And I know that now what was being said was my higher power said to me, I know that you need me now. Here's my Bible, but I have no religious affiliation. I will be anything you want me to be. Read each page carefully, including the preface and the forewords, and I'll guide you step by step to a new life. You will be born again. One stipulation: when you recover, you must carry this message to another. So I grabbed the book, I signed on the dotted line, and I was all in from the start. So looking back, that was the spiritual experience for me. So I opened the book and I was mesmerized right out of the gate. I knew I needed to do it fast though, because nothing else had been able to, you know, get me abstinent with food. I was lucky enough to find my home group at Scottsdale right away, the meeting online. I went to my first meeting and I heard a woman share and I said, that's the one. I don't understand a word she's saying, but that's the one. And we've been together since. So here I am, excited to dive into the big book. And instead, she says to me, I want you to read the preface and the foreword through spiritual eyes, whatever that meant, and underline what stands out to you and we'll discuss it. And I'm thinking, preface and the forewords in books are so friggin' boring. Like, what am I getting myself into? So, needless to say, I'm here speaking tonight because I could not be more wrong. For one thing, they prepared me for the road ahead so that there were no surprises. For example, there are multiple underlying plugs and hint for sponsorship. So right out of the gate, I know that the purpose of this book is to recover so that I can sponsor, period. Which is so important because we know that so many people fall out after step 11 from fear of sponsoring. So statements like, in order to save himself, he must carry the message to another, or strenuous work with another alcoholic is vital to permanent recovery. Those are the discussions we have. And by the time my sponsees get to step 12, I'm telling you, they are excited to sponsor. The forward to the second editions also prepares us that we're going to have to do a moral inventory. Again, great, no surprises. It also tells me that we're not a religious organization, which is so important because in the doctor's opinion and early on in the book, it speaks a lot about God. And so right away, that tells me that, okay, you know, I'm Jewish, I can kind of develop my own thing here. It also says there is great hope for all those who have yet found no answer, may begin to find one in presently. Join us in the high road to a new freedom, a new life will enter the world. What an invitation for someone like me that has no hope. That makes me want to read on. Last, but absolutely not least, because this really is the focus that I want to bring up. The forward to the fourth edition speaks to the language of the heart in all its power and simplicity. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there is no other place in the big book that talks about the language of the heart. For me, 9 times out of 10, sponsees don't know what that is. It is the language spoken in the big book. This discussion with my sponsees is instrumental in understanding the big book. It opens my heart and my mind to absorb the information that's ahead. I don't know if I would ever have understood the big book without that discussion. The language of the heart helps me understand the psychic change when the thought or action starts in my head and moves down to my heart, and that place is where I react from, is what I consider the psychic change. And I, again, honestly don't know if I would have had the same big book experience if I hadn't read the prefaces, the preface and the forewords prior to the doctor's opinion, because they laid the foundation for my journey through the big book. I was prepared for the road, for the wild road ahead. That's a wrap, 19 minutes. Thanks, guys.
Ah, Bonnie, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
We will now open the meeting for questions or for 3-minute shares. As this is a big book study, sharing and questions should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week. We ask you to accept this guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you'd like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand. And there are people on the second page that I would be so grateful if they would share. Kimberly and Mike and Mindy Kay and people that just don't share very often. It would be so lovely if you would share. Would the timekeeper please set a timer for 3 minutes for each share and announce when time is up? If the speaker is asked a question, please allow 3 minutes for the answer. And I'll begin with the raised hands. Leslie G.
I didn't know I was first. Okay. Hi, family. Leslie G, recovering one day at a time. Bonnie, this was so, so, so wonderful. And I really thank you for it and your brutal honesty. And I love what you had to say about the language of the heart. Because I didn't really understand. So it's just, tell me if I'm correct, please. It's when the information in the big book moves from my head into my heart and that I can take it in. Is that correct?
For me, I'm okay. Sure. Well, Bill Wilson wrote a lot on it, so he probably would be the authority to look up. But he did. He wrote a lot on it. And so I don't understand why it wasn't in the big book. It's only in the last foreword. But yeah, I mean, that's basically what it is, because being a business person and, you know, having a background in business and just being a thinker, just always reacted and thought from my head. But now sometimes if I stop for a minute, I can actually feel it moving from my head, like down into my chest.
Oh, and absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it means a lot more than that, a lot more, but that's kind of how I see it.
Okay. And then just the other thing I wanted to say, because when I lived my life, I was very bulimic and I wasn't aware I was aware that I was doing it. I was aware that it had grown from almost nothing because I wasn't born a compulsive overeater to force to 6-hour binges, you know, grace binging while I watched TV. My mom would walk into the room and I'd throw those covers over my food, you know, and that I damaged my esophagus. I totally forgot that. I don't know what they did. I have no remembers. And I don't remember. And that I, numerous times, would hit myself in the head. I had such self-hate. And I just wanted to share that because I think it's important. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.
I've never heard anybody else say that. So thanks. I know I'm not alone.
Thank you, Leslie.
I'm hitting my head.
Thank you, Bonnie. Stephanie?
Hi, Stephanie, recovering compulsive overeater. Thank you so much, Bonnie, for the share. I too related to so many of the things you said. And one of the biggest things were the gummy bears. It was crazy for me as far as one of the last things I wanted to give up in my with my food was my gummy bear vitamins. And obviously that was a problem because I would, you know, a bottle would last me a week. And so I obviously wasn't taking them the way they were supposed to, but it was a vitamin. And so I just, you know, took them as much as I wanted. And I was just, I was living in the delusion that I could keep something in my life that just absolutely was not part of reality for me. And the other thing that I really related to were the local meetings. When I first came into program, I went to the local meetings, and it was, they did teach me about abstinence, but I did not learn about recovery until I started going to a big book study. And I remember when I went to local meetings and they pulled out the big book, and I would just roll my eyes and go, oh my God, I'm not an alcoholic. Why are they doing this? And it was such a sense of waste of time for me. But I just didn't understand the beauty of the book and how much it changed my life when I truly learned how to read those first 164 pages and use it as a blueprint for living a life that is associated with serenity and has given me my relationship with my higher power. I just was very moved by your share. I had never been bulimic, and actually my sickness and my addiction is that I wish I had been when I was in my disease, because I thought, wow, you know, if I could just eat whatever I wanted to throw up, that would just be so much easier in life. But I never did that. And that was God working in a mysterious way, because it can truly harm you. And I just was thinking like an addict. So thank you so very much for your share. It really was very insightful and just really made me appreciate the beauty of the big book, the preface and the forewords too, which means so very much to me. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lynn?
Hi, everybody. Lynn S., recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Hi, Bonnie P. I've seen you at so many meetings that we've attended together, but I've never really heard your story. And I thank you so much. And you said something that really hit me hard. And you were talking about how you hated yourself for not being able to control your behaviors. And then you said, you know, how you really hated people who lied. You had no respect for them. But you lied to yourself thousands and thousands and thousands of times. And then you said, no wonder I hated myself. And Bonnie, that stopped me. Just stopped me. In fact, I lost a lot of your talk because I went, oh my gosh, that's one of the main reasons why I hated myself right there is the constant lying to myself. You know, I can do it this time. I'm going to do it. I know I'm going to do it. And I used to sort of mean it sometimes when I said I was going to do it, but most of the time I really didn't mean it, because I knew I wasn't going to do it, because the food was more important than the doing it was, or the trying to do it was, and I'd really given up. But it's amazing when you hear somebody else say something that really just opens up another level of the understanding. And you really did that for me tonight with your talk. And then for just the recovery bit at the end there, It was really good, Bonnie. Thank you so much. But gosh, I love it when somebody says something and I completely am so much into it that I miss the rest of the talk. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Mindy, thank you.
Hi, my name's Mindy. I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you for hosting the meeting today. And thank you, Bonnie, so much for speaking. I loved listening to you. And I identified with so much of what your story. Oh, my God. My parents were, well, you're not Holocaust survivors. I'm so sorry your parents were. But we did lose a lot of people in the Holocaust in my family. We had a very dysfunctional family in relationship to food. My mother was the skinny one, and food was, we all had to be on diets. We had to be skinny. Nobody would ever want us if we were not skinny. We were worthless. And my father had a weight problem, and he went along with the whole thing too. And he kept trying. He was obese, and my brother Alan was obese. And we all struggled with it. My brother Stephen was the good-looking, social one who didn't have a weight problem, and he was the one that was idolized. And the rest of us were damaged. At least that's what I felt. I was very damaged. And you said that your father locked the door to the kitchen. Oh, my God. They used to turn on the floor alarm so that I couldn't go into the kitchen. From the bedrooms were in one part of the house, and then there was a hallway. And so they turned the motion detector on. So I couldn't walk in that part of the house to the kitchen. So I couldn't go to the kitchen. So I would have to sneak into their room at night and try and quietly turn off the alarm and go into the kitchen and then sneak back in there and turn the alarm off again, you know, on again, because God forbid I was caught. You know, when before this started happening, me and my brothers and father would all meet in the kitchen in the middle of the night and eat and sneak food. And I was given diet pills. I was addicted to water pills and laxatives. I had all the requisite problems. I had two lap band surgeries. And I damaged my esophagus. I have Barrett's esophagus, and hiatus hernia, but that runs in my family. So I don't know if I caused it or it was just there, but the Barrett's was definitely from it. I was never bulimic per se, but the Lap-Band makes you throw up. That's one of the side effects of it. So I've been struggling with weight since I was three. But anyway, you were wonderful. It's so good to hear you talking about the big book. I know I did a lot of work on the beginning. I haven't made it that far yet to step one. So good to hear you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mindy. Christine.
Hi, my name is Christine, compulsive overeater. Bonnie, thank you so much for your share. Your story definitely had me, you captured me as an audience, to hear the depths and despair that we can go through, just to get a little peace and comfort, right? Because that's why IE is for peace and comfort, right? And not realize how much we're damaging ourselves. And I too, in true addict form, and was not the person who would purge my food, but I always wish I could. So that's, you know, that is me as an addict wishing I could do that. You know, when I was younger, I was a little overweight. I wasn't super obese, but I was overweight enough that I started to notice that I was different than people around me, my age. And my mom would always just tell me it was just baby fat and it's going to go away. And it really never went away, you know, and I kept waiting for that day for it to go away. But I also had food parties. Whenever I had friends over, I would make a tray of like snacky foods. And that, I don't even know where that came from. Like, why did I feel it necessary to like feed us when we had just had dinner? I hid food from myself a lot of the times. And then when I would go through phases of dieting or whatever, I would then find the hidden bag of something and be like, how long has this been here? And you know, one of the things that I'm recognizing about myself right now, and these are some things that I'm working with my sponsor, is acknowledging the fact that, you know, I have a fear of a lot of things. I have a fear of not sounding good enough when I share. I have a fear of sponsoring. And I have that fear of, you know, I heard you say that you were all in, like you were ready to do this thing. And I had to think back and I'm like, I don't know if I had that feeling of being all in. Some of the things I'm reflecting on right now is, you know, I'm really good at assignments. I'm really good at following direction. But I'm also at a place right now where my prayer meditation is lacking. And I actually ended up relapsing over the weekend. So my sponsor and I are, you know, we have a plan of action about trying to get me back on track. And so she's like, you need to start sharing more at meetings. So that's what I'm doing. And I really appreciate everybody being here. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Christine. Francesca.
Sorry, did you want to stop the record? Is it, do you?
2 minutes, right after you.
Okay.
Unless you want me, I mean, we can. Okay.
First of all, let me start my time. Say Francesca, grateful compulsive reader and bulimic, and still very clearly need the people programs because, you know, let me control this situation. That's not my business and tell y'all about the time thing or the record. Anyways, I just loved your share. I heard you share at Scottsdale once, and I remember that meeting very specifically, not just your share, because like afterwards, it was just like everyone was like in a living room, you know, we're all just like, and you like answered so many questions, and a lot of people stayed on the after meeting. And so and when I first saw you, I hadn't really seen you at this meeting. So I was like, ooh, I bet she's a speaker. So I just really related. I mean, we all have the same story. I mean, the like, oh yeah, my husband or oh, my roommate, like, you know, just so many of the things. And like, I also hated liars, and I would point out to other people how someone was a liar, and they'd be like, how do you know? And I'm like, well, let me tell you. And they'd be like, oh yeah. And I'm like, yeah, they just lie. And it's like, cause I did that, you know? And something that you had said that just kind of struck me was, you know, that, like no one would want me, that kind of thing. And it's like, what about me wanting myself, you know? Cause I always had that thing too, of just like, you know, if you're overweight, you're just never going to be like sort of desirable. So if someone did desire me, it's like, well, not really, you know? And then that too of like, well, they don't actually know I'm like this monster. Like they don't know what do I do and how I live. So, and yeah, I just loved how you said, oh my gosh, like I wrote this in caps. There is never going to be a tomorrow. You know, just like, yeah. And just also I wrote something down that like qualifying as a way to be like grateful and humble, because like I can hear that in your qualification. Like it's not a drunkalogue, it's just like, you know, this is what it was like. And so yeah, I just kind of appreciated that, because sometimes I get confused about that in meetings. I'm like, should we talk about the problem? You know, so it's just nice to see that kind of like attraction versus promotion, and just kind of that energy. As someone once said in this meeting to me, goosed with the spirit. So yeah. And I really relate to having, I come from four grandparents who all had really severe trauma, including a Holocaust survivor. So just that generational trauma that like wasn't dealt with my parents. And yeah, just that food party. Me and my brother, I just didn't realize there were food parties because we just all binged together, you know? So I don't know. I wrote a lot of other stuff. And afterwards, I'm always like, I didn't say everything I wanted to say. So just thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, Maya. Francesca. We will now stop the recording for unrecorded questions or shares. Would the Zoom host please stop the recording?